Welcome to From the Front Porch, a conversational podcast about books, small business, and life in the South.
Sometimes it seemed like that was all that could be done. Either find the person who could hold you afloat in turmoil, or be that person yourself to somebody else. Taking turns, getting through it, until your final day. Justine Champagne, Knife River. I'm Annie Jones, owner of The Bookshelf, an independent bookstore in beautiful downtown Thomasville, Georgia. Today, I'm joined by Bookshelf Operations Manager Olivia and Online Sales Manager Erin to give you a rundown of our favorite new books releasing in May. If you're a new or new-ish listener, you might not realize that From the Front Porch is a production of The Bookshelf, a small, independently owned bookstore in rural South Georgia. By listening to our show and recommending it to your friends, you are helping keep our indie bookstore in business. And if you like what you hear, one way you can financially support us is through Patreon. In 2024, we're conquering the classic American novel Lonesome Dove together through Patreon with our monthly recap episodes. So for $5 a month, you can access those conversations as well as our porch visits, which are monthly live Q&As where we talk about everything from pop culture to nail polish to what books you should take on your next vacation. To learn more about our Patreon tiers and benefits, you can visit patreon.com/from the front porch. I would love for you to join us there, and I'm so grateful to all the people who have joined us there this year. We've got a fun community, and we are loving recapping Lonesome Dove with you. Now, back to the show. We are recapping May new releases, believe it or not. And as we go through these books, just keep in mind that Erin has made browsing the podcast book selections super easy. You can go to bookshelfthomasville.com and type episode 475 into the search bar, where you'll see all of today's books listed, ready for you to pre-order or purchase. You can then use the code NEWRELEASEPLEASE at checkout and get 10% off your order of today's titles. Hi, Olivia.
Hello.
And hi, Erin.
Good morning. I just have to say, True Blue podcast listeners will know that this is a momentous day because when I walked in, I see they're planting a tree outside of our store.
It's a little baby, but it'll grow up.
Celebrate. It may take years for it to provide shade, but it's coming, friends. It's coming.
Oh, I'm so happy.
It is very exciting, honestly.
I really hope that tree gets an essay in your upcoming book.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to put it in there. When did they remove that tree? Or when did that tree crack in half?
Was it?
Post-pandy.
I was going to say 2022.
Yeah, that feels right. Maybe the end of 2022.
Because you remember it almost fell on that car.
Yeah.
Yes. It split in half. And then it was, I actually think it was hot because I remember, like, yeah. I think it was either early. Oh. I think it was either summer or maybe August of 2022. That's a long time for them to not have done anything.
It was on a Saturday because Nancy was there and I was there.
Yeah.
And it feels like it was on a sidewalk sale Saturday. Because it was busy.
It wasn't a sidewalk sale. Because then it would have just, then it would have ruined the sidewalk sale. Because it cracked in half. Like, it fell.
Yeah.
But I remember it. It was the day I was there, too.
It was just busy.
Well, I almost stopped and thanked the gentleman, like, that was putting it in.
I thought about it, too.
And I was like, is that too weird? Is that too weird?
Yeah. No, I would be like, thank you so much. Okay, first of all, aesthetically, I have missed the tree desperately. Is this too much time to devote to a tree on this podcast?
No,
I don't know.
Never.
But it also, so aesthetically, it's been missing. It feels like a missing thing. But also, the store is so hot and candles get ruined. Books turn yellow faster. My office is an oven. Like, with no tree, it really has made a huge difference. So I know it'll take a while for that tree to grow, but
I bet that's why our AC broke. Because it was overcooling the store. We should tell the city. Yes. They should pay for it.
They should pay for our air conditioning. Does it feel, please just tell me, does it feel nice and cool there today?
It really does.
It really does. Chilly, frigid even. Yeah.
I was cold yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's how let me tell you, I told Jordan, I said, this is, from now on, I'm trusting my gut because pen to plate night, I was like, it's hot in here. it's hot in here. And everybody was like, no, I think it's just, we're working really hard. And we were working hard, but I was like, no, it's hot. And you know, there's 30 people in there. So you thought, yeah. maybe that the whole weekend I was like, it's too hot. It's too hot. Because there are times when I'm freezing in the store, even when I'm busting my butt, and mm-hmm. I haven't been freezing in downstairs in forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
Come back now. You will be freezing.
I mean, let it be known, Annie, that you said that multiple times. And I believe it was me every time that was like, it's fine. It's fine. It's just the doors open.
It was honestly a real role reversal. It was a real role reversal because I feel like normally I'm the one that's like, it's fine, guys, we'll be fine. And it was... This was unusual for you to be like, no, I promise, it's okay. I think you were just in reader retreat mode where our default is like, everything's fine. It's everything's right. fine.
Yeah.
Nothing. I have, okay, wait, one side tangent I just wanted to say real quick related is that we've been watching Survivor. We've been watching various seasons. Yeah. So most recently, we just started watching the Millennials versus Gen X Survivor.
That's and a good one.
It's hilarious. We're having a great time. But we were like, oh, how are millennials going to look? And I'll tell you, the thing that Jordan and I are cracking up the most is how often a millennial says, everything's fine. It's okay. And Jordan and I were like, is that the millennial mantra? Is like, are we the dog in the fire saying everything's fine? Because that's been our whole lives. 9/11, a war, a recession, like a pandemic, like is, and we're just like, everything's fine. We're okay. Like is yeah. that, is that
and
the millennial
we're probably
mantra?
The worst off out of everyone. Yeah.
I was going to say, and that sounds like just repressing feelings. It doesn't sound yeah. like actual things being fine.
It's why we're all in therapy. Cause we're just yeah. sitting around going, everything's fine when everything is objectively not fine.
Yeah.
Inside we are crying for sure.
Our therapists yeah. are all just like, but you know, it's not right.
Right. Although my therapist did tell me recently, she was like, you know, you don't have to process everything. I was like,
what does that even mean? That feels like a lie.
I process all day, every day. What are you talking about?
How are you supposed to live life if you don't process?
Right. It's a process. Anyway, what does she know? She's just a therapist. She's just a professional.
Just a professional.
Mental health yeah. professional. Okay. Well,
here we are
to talk about books
the therapy.
In May. I do have some good books to talk about. I'm looking forward to talking about them. It has been, for me, I just recorded the reading recap episode for April. This has been a weird reading season for me. And I don't know mm-hmm. if you all feel that way, where like books have been kind of hit or miss.
Yeah.
But I do think there are some good releases coming out in May. I will kick us off. I know Olivia read this book too. So Olivia, feel free to tell me your thoughts. But there's a book releasing next week called The Ministry of Time. It releases on May 7th. I suspect we will be seeing this book everywhere. The reason I suspect that is I'm pretty sure we received at the bookshelf multiple ARCs of this book. It is a book I think the publisher is really excited about. I think indie bookstores are really excited about it. But I am reading this book right now, and I really am having a good time. It's a very fun romp of a book. Multiple genres. We're talking a dash of science fiction, a smidgen of romance, a little bit of historical fiction. Oh, also a spy novel, kind of all of the above. Erin, I
sounds
think you
like
might
my
like
favorite
this
kind
too.
Of book.
Actually, yeah.
I do think you yeah. would like it, Erin.
Okay,
I
good.
Think so too.
I'll put it on my list.
Basically, we have a young woman. She's a civil servant working in Great Britain. She's applying for a new job at this pretty secretive Ministry of Time because in a few years after the pandemic, turns out that Great Britain discovered that they could time travel and that they had access to time travel portals. And so they have brought back, I think, 5 people from various points in history, 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, they have brought them through the portal. And each person, each time travel, I think they even almost refer to them as refugees, like each refugee has been assigned a bridge. And so this unnamed narrator, this young woman who's a civil servant, she gets the job as being a bridge. And her client, her person she's been assigned is Commander Graham Gore. And he was from the lost 1845 Royal Navy Arctic Expedition. This is, you need to know, Graham Gore is a real person. And that expedition really did happen. There's Aaron's face. Love that guy. Love that gasp. So he's a real person. There is a very funny author's note about like how Kayleigh Ann Bradley came up with this premise. It was basically during the pandemic, and she honestly, Olivia, she sounds a little bit like you. She became obsessed with like Arctic expeditions. And then she was like, what if I wrote a book about this?
That expedition is actually pretty interesting. I have read about it.
Of course you have.
I feel like you guys would totally hit it off. So anyway, she decides to write this book. So the book is mostly narrated by our unnamed Bridge, who has Graham Gore under her care. I will say I have seen so many comparisons to Outlander, to the movie About Time. I think all of that is accurate. You know, there's a plethora of time travel related books or TV shows that you could probably list as comps here. But the one that I think is most accurate thus far is the movie Kate and Leopold.
Yes, that's what I was just thinking about.
Hugh Jackman and Meg Ryan. Because in that movie, Leopold time travels and she kind of partners with him, uses him to advance her career a little bit. And then he constantly is adjusting to life in the modern world. And what I will say is there's a lot happening in this book. Like I said, spy novel, you can't really tell. Is the Ministry of Time a good thing or a bad thing? Mm. Are they nefarious? What's going on? There's historical fiction. There is a romance, a romantic element. But what I have been most amused by is the five time travelers and their adjustment to the modern era. I have laughed out loud a couple of times. This is a light, fun book. This is not thus far a super heavy book. Certainly the author, so Kayleigh Ann Bradley is a British Cambodian writer, and she definitely adds, I would assume perhaps some autobiographical elements to the Bridge. The Bridge in the novel is also British Cambodian. And so she's talking a lot about colonialism and a lot about the role Great Britain played in discovery and perhaps conquering things that didn't belong to them, claiming land that didn't belong to them, claiming people that didn't belong to them. So there's really some interesting stuff in this book. But for the most part, even with those heavier bits of subject matter, this is a light, fun, very summery, springy book. I think that's why it's appealing to a lot of indie booksellers. It's already been released in the UK. It's even sold, I think, the TV rights in the UK. I think they've already bought the rights to like a miniseries or something like that. But I'm really having a great time with it. It is The Ministry of Time. It releases on May 7th.
I thought it was really fun too. And I feel like this was one of the one instances where I read the book first and then I was like, you have to read this. And I feel like that mostly happens where you read it first and like, I have to read it.
Yes. That's part of the reason I brought it home and I kind of put it aside because I was like, oh, I don't know. It almost felt like too weird for me, like too much stuff happening. And then I've not been in a reading rut, but every book I've read has been hefty. And I don't necessarily mean heavy. Like I read Lies and Weddings, which I'm going to talk about next, but like it is thick.
Yeah.
So every book has felt like a time commitment, I guess is what I'm saying. And then I saw this one on the shelf and I was like, oh, that's not too long. And maybe it's just weird enough. And that's kind of how I feel about it. Like it's just weird enough. You really do have to just go with her though.
Yeah.
Because I started it and you feel a little lost right off the bat because it kind of starts almost in the middle of things. And so it took me a minute, but like, I just told myself, just trust her. And I think if you do that, it's pretty immediately entertaining. It's an odd little book.
It is. And I think going into it, knowing that it's going to be a fun read and not an intense read, I think I was hoping for this like time travel, heavy, dense of a book.
Yes.
And what I got was a fun, quote unquote, Annie romp.
And Yeah.
You have to go into it with that mindset, but it was good. It was fun. The banter is really well done.
I'm excited. I'm going to add it to my list.
Yeah, Erin, I do think you're going to like it.
Yeah. Okay. My first book is called The Kid by Jeff Shill. This comes out May 7th. This is a middle grade novel, a middle grade Western. So it's set in...
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. I feel like we don't get a ton of middle grade Westerns. The last one I read was Pony by R.J. Palacio. So I was really excited for this one. It's set in 1881 in Colorado, and it has three different storylines to it, but there's one that kind of weaves through it. And there's the one that weaves through it is this like kind of like fable about this person called the Kid. They are a child, mm-hmm. but they're like a person who like stops all the rebels, like anyone who's like coming to like do bad in their town, like they're the one who like stops them. He's infamous. And so this town mm-hmm. is kind of protected by this figure called the Kid, which then ends up like attracting more criminals because they're like, well, I'm the one who can beat the Kid. So one of the storyline is the story of these brothers who their father recently passed away. Their mother passed away a while ago. And now they're just on this farm trying to prove themselves that they don't need to be split up and they don't need a caregiver. Like they can do it on their own. So they like hide the fact that their father has just recently passed and they just try their best to like run the farm and keep their lives going. And then you get a criminal storyline, Snake Eyes Sam. And Snake Eyes Sam has Perfect. Just recently escaped from prison and he has heard about the Kid and he doesn't like that the Kid is like the infamous like person of the West. He wants to be known mm-hmm. as like the best, what is it? Sharp eye shooter person. The person who can shoot the best. Is that not it? Is it not it?
No, sharp, that's it.
Yeah. Sharp shooter, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. Okay. You did it.
I just added an extra word in there. I should be in there.
Yeah.
And so Sam breaks out of prison and starts to head towards this little town where he knows the Kid's going to be to prove himself. And then you get this third storyline of this guy named Herbert. And Herbert is the one who publishes all of the Kid's stories. He works for Gunslinger magazine. He is from the big city of Philadelphia. And he is making his way to Colorado because he hasn't had a story come from the Kid in a while. And he needs to keep his job. So he like literally hops on a bean cart, this guy who like sells beans to towns, and makes his way to Colorado to find the Kid. And all three of these storylines come together like right at the end in one big moment. And it was just so fun and so well done. It was great.
That is fun. This feels like the year of the Western to me. Yeah, I don't know.
Absolutely.
I've been reading Lonesome Dove, but then I think about The Bullet Swallower. Jordan and I have been watching, I don't know, we just rewatched like No Country for Old Men, which we love, mm-hmm. which obviously dark, very different from this book. But it just feels like, I don't know, I'm seeing a lot of Western
Beyonce,
bubbling up.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Cowboy Carter. Yeah. Yeah.
What age group is, I mean, is it middle grade, like more towards the higher end of middle grade? Or you feel like it's fun enough for chapter book readers too?
I think it could be 8 and up, as long as your 8-year-old doesn't mind a lot of talk about guns
oh, okay.
and like killing people.
You're like, that's to be expected. Okay.
I do think the publisher marketed it as 10 and up. Okay. And with some of the stuff that happens in there, I think 10 and up is fine. Mm-hmm. Nothing mm-hmm. super sad. It's all very like action packed, but it is a story mm-hmm. about like people who shoot bad guys for a living. Like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
there's yeah. not really a way around that.
Just curious. I was wondering if it was like something my kids would like. So that sounds like a fun read.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. My first book is called Last House by Jessica Shattuck. It comes out May 14th. This is a generational family story. It delves a little bit into historical fiction. I think it really is more of a backdrop for this family saga and not necessarily, I mean, the historical part of it does feature into it, but I wouldn't call it historical fiction. To me, that's not how I would shelve it. It's about Nick and Bette Taylor, which her name is Elizabeth Taylor. They all call her Bette.
Oh.
I was like, oh, Elizabeth Taylor. I guess this was before Elizabeth, the real, I don't know. Anyway, it's they're a young couple. They live in this, they've settled in this quaint sort of northern town. They have two young kids, and Catherine and Harry. Nick is a World War II veteran who now works as like a lawyer for American Oil. And his wife, Bette, is now a typical housewife, you know, PTO mom making stuff. But she has this former life where she, after college, she was recruited to be like a code breaker during World War II. So she has that past. And she kind of thought that that would continue. But when she marries Nick, of course, she falls into this domestic housewife role instead of keeping that up. So she is a very complex character, as is Nick. He's a very complex character. He's the son of a Mennonite pastor, I guess. And so he sort of grows up with a lot of guilt and like the sense of duty. And but he ends up going, which is where the book starts, is he ends up traveling to Iran during which I, this is where it falls into historical fiction, like in Iran, when they were trying to put the power back with the Shah and to get rid of whoever was in power then. I guess I didn't pay attention well enough in the book, but he's going over there like with the U.S. government. He's sort of been asked to go by this friend of his who may or may not work for the CIA, but he's asked to go over there and sort of broker this deal about oil and power. And so he goes over there and it goes really well. They do this transfer of power. And of course, he comes back to the United States, and he and Bette end up wanting to kind of have this retreat to get away from the city. And they end up buying a house in this place, this really very rural part of Vermont called Last House. And it's named that because the man who built the house, his last name was Last. So it's called Last House. So that's where we meet them. And we sort of see their family growing up during these summer visits to Last House. And then the rest of the book so far that I've read, which I'm almost finished with it, but is the perspective of their daughter, Catherine, who grows up in this sort of wealth and privilege, but then goes after college. There's a lot of like Dr. Martin Luther King has just been assassinated, and there's a lot of revolution and uprising, of course, in the U.S. And so she becomes sort of disillusioned with the life she grew up with. And she decides to leave her job as a teacher at this private school, and she goes to work for this leftist newspaper. And during all this time, there is a tragedy that befalls their family. And of course, the divide grows between her trying to fight this fight in America and her parents, who really believe they fought a different kind of fight to get the kind of life they've given their kids. And she doesn't want anything to do with it. She wants to be far away from them. So again, I haven't quite finished it, so I can't tell you how it ends. But I loved it all. I loved the characters of Nick and Bette. They were my favorite. They were very complex. Of course, I liked Catherine's perspective too, but I just really enjoyed seeing the transformation of Nick and Bette from this young married couple to sort of older people who've had to deal with quite a lot of change during their lifetime. So again, it's called The Last House by Jessica Shattuck. It comes out May 14th.
Oh, that sounds really good. It sounds like what book my mom might like too.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Covers some different historical points. And I do think that's interesting. It's always interesting to me, to parents versus children, and like, you know, the different battles that both are having to fight, but like a child might forget what her parents have already done. Anyway.
And they both, you know, they both think their cause is righteous, right? Like her parents have done what they feel was right for America and right for the, for them and their families. And she feels like what she's doing is more honorable, more noble than what her parents did.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, my next one is quite a bit of a departure from that, but it is Lies and Weddings by Kevin Kwan. This releases on May 21st. Of course, you perhaps are familiar with Kevin Kwan. He wrote the Crazy Rich Asians trilogy, but he also wrote Sex and Vanity, which came out, I want to say, in 2020. I think it was 2020. It might have been 2021. I've read all of those books, and I really like them. Kevin Kwan is just a reliable writer to me. Like, you kind of know what you're going to get. And that is very true of Lies and Weddings. There's so much going on in this book that I hesitate to even begin to explain. Kevin Kwan does a great job of covering a wide range of places in his literature and people. But the main character, for the most part, is a young man, very handsome man named Rufus. Rufus is the next Earl of Greshamberry, I believe is the name of the British area where he has grown up. His father is the Earl, but he is learning that the Earl of Greshamberry is in deep debt. And so to the outside world, it looks like they have a ton of money. They've been landed gentry forever. They own all this property, but they're actually in serious debt. And the mom, the wife of the Earl, is a real piece of work character, as we have come to kind of expect out of Kevin Kwan. And so she is urging her children to all marry money, including, and I thought what was interesting is including Rufus. So I feel like we get this a lot, particularly in Austen type, you know, Jane Austen literature, but instead of the woman being at the center, we have this young man who is supposed to marry a wealthy wife. And so we have, there's multiple love interests throughout the book, but from the very beginning, no spoilers, you know that Rufus really loves his next door neighbor, the girl he grew up with, Eden. Eden is the daughter of a doctor. He is the village doctor. He grew up being best friends with the Earl, and now he lives on the Earl's property with his daughter, Eden. He raised her as a single dad, more or less. And so Eden is now a doctor herself, and Rufus has been in love with her for as long as he can remember. But of course, she would be below his station. She would not be somebody that could be really, could not bring wealth to the family like they need. So that's really the heart of the story. Much of the first part of the book takes place at a family wedding. Like, the most absurd, this is what I love about Kevin Kwan, the most absurd, over the top, wealthy, bougie, like just the most, we would never experience anything like it. And so it's set on this like private island, I believe in Hawaii. And that's where the first part of the book takes place. But we also get scenes in Hong Kong, in California. There's some scenes in Marfa, Texas. So we, you kind of go all over. I love Kevin Kwan's books. I told Olivia, I always think they could be about 100 pages shorter sometimes. Like, I just feel like he covers so much. But I'm never bored. Like, so sometimes I feel like, oh, this is a lot. Like, this is long. But I'm never bored. He keeps the plot moving. The characters are interesting. Even though there's often a ton of them, I never have trouble keeping them apart. He does a good job of kind of letting you know who people are and who's important to pay attention to. And a lot was happening in this book, but I loved it. I was highly entertained, and it felt like a summer book to me. Like, I felt like, oh, I'm having a good time. I could read this on a beach. And it's not a one sit read. I don't think his books really are. I think his books, they're great for like a spring break or a week at the beach or something where you read a little bit every day. Yeah. I like Kevin Kwan. I like having an author that I know, oh, he's fun. Like, I can read his books and have a good time, and he's reliable, which I enjoy. So that's Lies and Weddings by Kevin Kwan, out on May 21st.
It's also got a really pretty cover.
Yeah.
Great cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His books generally do. They have good covers.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, I'm doing another middle grade novel. I almost went all middle grade with this episode, but my last one will be adult. This is okay. The Secret Library by Kekla Magoon, and this is also out May 7th. I love Kekla Magoon. I've read several things by her. My favorite was Chester Keen Cracks the Code, which I think I talked about maybe last year or the year before. And now she wrote a book called The Secret Library, and I love a good secret library, so I was all about it. So this is a book about a girl named Delilah. Everyone calls her Dolly. And she lives with her mother. Her grandfather recently passed away, and he was who she was closest with in her life, because her mother is this big businesswoman who is all about Dolly's academic classes. She has like a tutor after school. Her life is very scheduled because of her mother and her mom wanting her to take over this family business. Whereas her grandfather was the kind of person who brought the fun into Dolly's life and less pressured person in her life. So when he passes away, she's really upset. She just wants to join this after school club called the Adventurers Club, which sounds really fun. But her mom is like, we can't fit it in your schedule, and it brings no academic advancement to your life. So it's a no. So Dolly like breaks into her grandfather's study and finds this packet that's left to her. And it's these directions that she doesn't know where she's headed to. So she calls her private driver because they're very rich. And he like, she follows the directions and he takes her to this cupcake shop. She's like, okay, sure. I don't know why my grandfather left me hidden directions to a cupcake shop, but she goes in and it's this library. And this library is filled with books that are personalized for each individual patron that comes in. And it's filled with either secrets or mysteries or revelations through her family's past. She goes in, or like people that surround her life, like her first book that she enters, because she like physically goes into it. She can interact with the people there, but she finds out like the gardener made a mistake one time and like knocked over a statue, and he blamed Dolly because he knew if he didn't that he would be fired. And she was really upset at first about it when she didn't know that this happened. But now that she saw the backstory, she's like, okay, I get it. And so now she's like addicted to going to this library and like revealing these like secrets. Her father was never in the picture. So she gets to like see how her father and mother met and meet all of these characters from her family's past that she just never heard about because her mother never talked about them. And it has this really big ending. I'm going to let you read it for yourself. But it ended so well. It was one of those endings where I was just like, I didn't see it coming. And I'm so glad it happened, even though it's one of those bittersweet moments. And I feel like in a lot of middle grade, you get like a beautiful bow tied at the end. And this one, it was a bow, but with like frayed ribbon. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful.
That is
Thank
beautiful.
You. You can quote me.
Tear running.
That was so lovely. Yeah.
I came up with that on the spot.
Oh my God. That's so good.
But yeah, so that was The Secret Library by Kekla Magoon. It is so well done. I got a walking pad, and so I've been reading it on my Kindle, and I just kept walking because I was like, I don't want it to end yet.
Oh, good.
And it's one of those things where I felt like The Midnight Library could have been repetitive, and this, The Secret Library, could have felt repetitive, and it never did, because you were right there with Dolly, and you were like, no, tell me more secrets, you know? It was really done.
Sounds really incredible. I am sorry to have to go to this next book after that, but I mean, it was a good book, but here we go. I will say too, the thing about The Last House I wanted to say is also that the writing is so beautiful that many times I was actually reading it. I would like highlight a passage and text it to my husband. You got to read this. And to me, that's always a sign. I never do that. So I'm like, that's a sign that the writing was really relatable and very beautiful. So that's just another plug for The Last House. Okay, on to this one. Okay, this is called When We Were Silent by Fiona McPhillips. It comes out May 21st. I just have to say,
that is a real detour.
I feel like the record scratch is about to happen, and we're just gonna like pull the reins back here because this book is dark. It is full of triggers. I listened to this one.
Can I ask a question? Fiona McPhillips, is this what I've been seeing everywhere? Like, is she the new Colleen Hoover? I've been seeing these types
Frieda
of
books. No, Frieda McFadden.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Never mind.
Frieda F and M. I see how you got there.
Fiona. <Yes. laughs>
Thank you. Okay.
But I think this might be her debut novel, Fiona McPhillips. But I have been seeing it everywhere also. And it is a great book. I was listening to it. It kept me listening. I kept wanting to go back and finish it. But it is, especially as a parent, it's full of triggers. It's set in 1980, set in two different timelines. The first one we get is 1986 in Ireland. So the girl narrating it, like wonderful, beautiful Irish accent. I loved it. This is about Louise Manson, and we meet her and her best friend, Tracy. Her friend, Tracy, commits suicide, and then it was discovered afterward that Tracy was pregnant because this is not funny. I should be laughing, but I'm just like, wow, this is a lot. Louise found out that Tracy was pregnant because she was being molested by her high school swimming coach. And so Louise decides, okay, I'm going to seek justice. I'm going to apply to this private, you know, very fancy school. And so she does. She gets a scholarship to go there. And her only intention is she's kind of in cahoots with the brother of the girl who passed away. She's like, I'm going to go there and I'm going to kind of submit myself to him. And I'm going to catch him in the act. And then we're going to ruin his life, right? Get him arrested, whatever, fired, all that stuff. And it plays out that way. She goes, and of course, he's a terrible, horrible predator person. So he starts to prey on her. But it turns out it's not just her. It's like multiple girls, and it's been going on for years. And when she has enough proof that she thinks, okay, now I can go to the authorities, now I can go to the school administrators, she goes to them, and everyone turns a blind eye because he's this very famous coach who's also kind of coaching this Irish swimming team for the Olympics. And so then she's stuck, and they start to try to ruin her life by saying it was her, you know, she brought it on herself, and all that. It kind of starts to turn back on her. So she is in a very tough position, and I won't say how it culminates. It does culminate in the death of someone. I won't say who, but then we meet Louise when she's a grown up. She's a professor. She's married. She has a daughter of her own. And she's asked to testify at this trial where another young person is now suing the same school for the cover up and of abuses have been happening all these years because it was happening to them as well. So she's like, do I get back into this? It ruined my life. Do I get back into this? Do I leave it alone? And so we do kind of get that back and forth where you know, we meet her and all the horrible things that happen to her. And then we meet her in the future, trying to go back and really make things right once and for all. So again, it's very dark. It's not, I will say, it's not super graphic. Like, I'm very sensitive to that. And I think I would have stopped reading had it gotten to the point where it was graphic. It's uncomfortable because it's a terrible thing happening to underage girls who don't seem to have any power of their own. But at the end, I feel like it vindicates what happens, and it just kind of makes you want to fight for people experiencing this. So I will say it kind of ended with redemption and hope in a way. And it's called When We Were Silent by Fiona McPhillips.
That does sound good. And it sounds like a good audiobook experience, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the sort of campus novel feeling to it, you know, sort of secrets being uncovered and, you know, the people who are supposed to stand up for you are not standing up for you. So those are sort of, I think, a good element to any fiction book.
Okay, my last book I want to talk about is Knife River. This is by Justine Champagne. This releases on May 28th. This is a debut novel. I loved it. It reminded me a little bit of my reading experience of Granite Harbor, which I think I talked about last episode, maybe. I don't know. But this is about two young women, Liz and Jess. Liz is 19 and Jess is 13 when their mother leaves their house to go for a walk and she never comes home. And Liz and Jess are beside themselves. Police become involved. But in their small town, the small police force, like, their mother is never found. So Liz raises Jess. When Jess is 18, she leaves Knife River. That's the name of their tiny town. Jess leaves, but Liz stays. And then 10 years later, Jess is kind of aimless. She bounces from girlfriend to girlfriend. She's living with a woman when she gets a call from her sister, Liz, now in her 30s. And Liz says, "Hey, they have found remains. We think they're mom's. Can you come home?" And so Jess hasn't been back to Knife River, you know, in the last 10 plus years. She comes home. Liz still lives in their same house. The house is kind of falling apart. Liz is not taking care of herself because Liz has become obsessed with solving their mother's disappearance. And the mystery, the suspense that unfolds is so good. Like, I really liked Granite Harbor a lot, but had a couple of qualms just with how things were all tied up. I had no such qualms with this book. I felt like the mystery was really smart, kept me on my toes. You desperately want to know what happened to this mom. You also, I think while that is going on, and part of what makes this, instead of perhaps just a suspense novel or a thriller, this very much feels in the literary suspense category or literary thriller category. And I think that's because of all the character work that Justine Champagne is doing with Liz and Jess. So you get a lot of sister stories. You get a lot about Liz as the sister who stayed and the kind of the repercussions of her mother's disappearance on her. And then Jess, who's kind of aimless, and the kind of the repercussions of her mother's disappearance on her. At the same time, Jess has kind of fallen back into a relationship, a flirtation with her high school girlfriend or her high school crush. And so that's at play, and what role that, it's a small town. And so if she gets back with her, will that have repercussions on the investigation? You constantly have questions about the police because this is a small town and they've never been able to solve this. You know, are they incompetent? Are they malicious? I thought the whole thing was really good. I wanted a book that I could read in a couple of settings because it'd been a minute since I binged something. And this did that for me. Like, I was hooked from start to finish. It reminded me most of Long Bright River, which I know is a book Olivia and I both really loved and read. And then Descent, the Tim Johnson book, because both of those stories deal with nature. You know, Knife River is set in upstate New York. So you get a really rich setting. And then both of those are sister stories. And this book really does belong to Liz and Jess. I loved it. I loved how it all wrapped up. I thought it was really smart. That is Knife River by Justine Champagne. And Champagne? God, I don't even, what have I been saying? Champagne.
Don't overthink it. It sounded great.
That's okay. Right.
You sounded confident.
Justine Champagne. Great. Releases May 28th.
It also sounds a little bit like, I didn't read this, but I think you did. Miracle Creek. Is that it? Or by that same author, where one of the parents just wanders off, or the child?
Happiness Falls.
Yeah.
When Happiness Falls. Yes, I would agree.
Someone wanders off.
Yeah.
It was so good because the whole time you're reading it, you're wondering, well, did she just leave? You're left wondering, is this really a murder mystery, or is this the case of a mom who just left and now the girls, these women are facing the consequences of that? Or are the girls right and she really, something nefarious and awful really did happen to her? And you don't know, you, the reader, can't figure out what you believe, which I like that, where you're kind of left in the dark too. So I really liked it a lot. I think I left it on your desk, Olivia, in case you want to read it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I'll probably. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Okay. My next book is a long title, but I'm very excited about it. It's The Last Murder at the End of the World by Stuart Turton, which I read that title and I was like, yes, please. I also love Stuart Turton. He actually, Kate Storhoff, who used to work here, introduced me to him. She read 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, told me I should read it. I did. And then I was hooked. So the world has been destroyed by this fog that comes through, all except for this little island that is like encircled by the fog, but the fog never enters the island. And it's filled with these villagers who it's almost like this utopian society. They live and they work to build this community and keep it running in a beautiful harmony. There's never any arguments. There's never any animosity. Like, it's all just, it's peaceful. But there's these three scientists that also live and work on this island. And they are kind of seen as almost like these godlike people. They're described as physically bigger than the other villagers. And they kind of run the island. They're the teacher of the island. They are the scientists that keep everything going behind the scenes. And then there's this voice that speaks to all of the villagers in their head. And
I know. I was not ready for that.
Slight turn, but stick with me.
I'm with you.
So throughout the book, you're never really sure if this voice is like a good thing or a bad thing. It's just like, it's always speaking to them. And it'll warn them, like, if you go down that way, you could get hurt. So they know not to go that way. Like, it does protect them from certain things. But it also, like, they have a strict curfew, and every night at a certain time, if they don't make it back to their bed, they just fall asleep where they're standing. And it's due to, like, the voice in the head. And and so the one night when they all wake up the next day, one of the scientists, like the head scientist, has been found stabbed. And it starts this domino effect of the villagers starting to ask questions about what's actually happening here and trying to figure out, why would someone kill the scientist? Like, they always thought she was this peaceful woman. What exactly is going on here? And it was so well done. We're like, for a while, you're questioning so many aspects of what's happening in this book. And then it all comes together at the end, and you have to stop there and think for a little while, because you're also like, wow, he just did that, didn't he? And it was so good. I think it definitely a bit science fiction-y, but it did feel based in real life, where they are on this island. They're all working towards this goal. They're doing practical things that we also do. And then this murder happens.
Yeah.
The sci-fi really comes in with, like, the voice in the head.
Yeah.
And all the behind the scene things that are happening.
But it still seems like it makes sense. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, somebody like me who might struggle with those elements, like, if it feels real to life, like, then I'm like, oh yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Because for a while in the book, you also just stop questioning the voice in the head, and you're just like, all right, we're just gonna go with this. Like, they seem fine with it, and no one has questioned what's happening, so why would I question it? But then it all makes sense in the end. It's so well done. I feel like I can't say too much about the plot, but it is, I think it might be my favorite one by him yet.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah,
I like the element that they all start asking questions. Like, that feels very real and relevant too, right? Like, something happens to sort of wake you up from this reverie, and then you start to question things you've always just thought were normal. And
That sounds it's like after the murder, when they wake up, they're, a lot of them are not in the same spot where they fell asleep. And they're just like, well, why am I here? And how did I get here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It was so good.
All right.
I love it. He like sets up these rules for the sit for, and then he just plays with the rules. Like, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. My last one is called I Hope This Finds You Well by Natalie Sue. It comes out May 21st. I have not finished this. I will give a caveat. I have not finished this, but I'm enjoying it so far. It follows Jolene. What a great name, Jolene. She has this sort of mind-numbing 9-to-5 job at a corporate office of a grocery store chain.
I'm sorry, 9-to-5 and Jolene in one sentence?
I don't know her hours. They don't say specifically. It could be 8-to-2. Who knows? It could be 3-to-11. I don't know.
Love it. Dolly Parton.
But this Jolene's working at 9-to-5. Like you said, she, of course, is just miserable. She doesn't like her job. She doesn't like her coworkers. She drinks to forget where she works. And there, I haven't gotten really to this part of the story yet, but apparently there is, when she was in high school, there was a tragic death of one of her close friends. And so I think she just sort of drinks to forget all of that. And also to help deal with her anger, when she writes emails to her coworkers, she puts passive aggressive or mostly just aggressive notes in the email, but in white font, so you can't see it. Which I'm like, should we say no? I don't want to write any aggressive messages, but if I did, I think that's brilliant, writing it in white font.
Coffee. I'm not going to highlight every email I get from Aaron just to see, like,
looking for suspicious spaces and then just highlighting what's in there like magic ink. But anyway, so she does that until one day she forgets to put it in white and it just goes out to a coworker. And of course, it's very aggressive and she's called into HR and they say, well, you know, we're not going to fire you, but you are going to undergo an anti-harassment course and you're also going to have your email monitored. And so when they set up the email monitoring, they accidentally set it up where she can see everyone else's email and direct messages. And so that's where I'm at so far. And apparently hijinks ensue. And I have a feeling that it may lead to, just kind of based on how it started, I have a feeling it may lead to maybe a little more compassion and empathy on her part, and or even just, even at the very least, just more interactions with her coworkers as she can see what's going on in all of their minds and their emails through their work email. So it's not too big. It sounds like a pretty small little book that's coming out, but it just sounds like a little kind of dark, satirical office, you know, fiction. So if that's up your alley, this would be great for you. It's called I Hope This Finds You Well by Natalie Sue. Comes out May 21st.
What a fun, eclectic group of books we have come up with today. It feels like there should be something for everybody.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. So if you are intrigued by any of the books we've talked about today, you can find them on the store website. That's bookshelfthomasville.com. You can browse by typing episode 475 into the search bar, and then use the code NEWRELEASEPLEASE at checkout to get 10% off your order. This week, I'm reading Very Bad Company by Emma Rosenblum. Olivia, what are you reading?
I'm reading The Unwedding by Ali Condy.
Erin, what are you reading?
I am listening to Funny Story by Emily Henry.
From the Front Porch is a weekly podcast production of The Bookshelf, an independent bookstore in Thomasville, Georgia. You can follow The Bookshelf's daily happenings on Instagram at BookshelfTville, and all the books from today's episode can be purchased online through our store website, bookshelfthomasville.com. A full transcript of today's podcast episode can be found at FromTheFrontPorchPodcast.com. Special thanks to Studio D Podcast Production for production of From the Front Porch and for our theme music, which sets the perfect warm and friendly tone for our Thursday conversations. Our executive producers of today's episode are Cami Tidwell, Linda Lee Drost, Martha, Stephanie Dean, Ashley Farrell, Jennifer Bannerton,
Nicole Marcy,
Wendy Jenkins,
Susan Eulings.
Thank you all for your support of From the Front Porch. If you'd like to support From the Front Porch, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Your input helps us make the show even better and helps us reach new listeners. All you have to do is open up the podcast app on your phone, look for From the Front Porch, scroll down until you see Write a Review, and tell us what you think. Or if you're so inclined, support us over on Patreon, where we have three levels of support. each level has an amazing number of benefits like bonus content, access to live events, discounts, and giveaways. Just go to patreon.com/from the front porch. We're so grateful for you, and we look forward to meeting back here next week.